You said that President McIntosh, you don't know why he had these.
I don't know why. Obviously, someone in the administrative structure felt that this might be divisive. And he really wanted things in advance. He didn't ever say that we couldn't do it. He just said, let's wait. And so the next year, we really started in earnest. And just a lot more of the faculty were involved, and certainly Dr. Peterson was wonderful. There was no one who could have helped us more and was more enthusiastic about it. And there were many interesting things that we did then in the beginning, because it's sometimes rather hard to sort them out because I remained active in other positions after I was president. Well, there was the sculpture symposium, though that was after I was president, and that was very interesting. I'm sure you know all about that.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that, but let's talk about those earlier years first, you know, the formative years. I've been told that there was some feeling that Dr. Peterson started the group.
Well, I feel that's an error because I never met Dr. Peterson until after this idea was conceived. I remember we met at Virginia's. There must have been a dozen women. At that time, they were all women. Though many of the male faculty assisted us, I don't think that anyone held office at first until much later, though they might have had specific jobs that they assisted us with. But no, I think that perhaps Virginia and Dr. Peterson had talked about it, and he felt that it would be a good idea. But I had never met Larry until the group was formed. And after our initial meeting in Virginia's home, we also had a luncheon out in the faculty dining room out at the college, and members of the arts staff were there, and it was discussed there. So it was not Dr. Peterson's idea, to the best of my knowledge.
Well, you said the original meeting at Virginia was, who was there?
Well, Phyllis Schmidt, for one, Mimi Guerin, Betty Wentworth, Betty was very helpful and instrumental because she arranged for the law firm of Ball, Hunt & Hart to do all our legal work in the incorporation papers, and they took care of all that for us, which was gratis, which was very fortunate. It was, again, another organization which had no money.
Mm-hmm.
As I've said several times, when we finally got it rolling, we all just put $5 in some container, perhaps not a hat, as people don't wear hats, but some container, and that was, and Virginia Waters was very active, because it was at Virginia Waters that we collected the money, and I suppose that there must have been 20 or 25 people there, so we got a little over $100 enough for postage. And then there was a big membership drive, which was also held at Virginia and Franklin Waters, and Larry Peterson arranged for the brass band from the college to march down La Perla, and it was very successful. Everybody had a wonderful time. No one knew we shouldn't drink at that time, so it was very helpful. And promoting the right feeling among everyone to join this fledgling organization. And it seems to me the dues were $5 then. $5 seemed to be the limit of our ambitions at that point. And then we were off and running.
Who chose the name Finance Affiliates?
That was, I believe Virginia did some research, and this seemed to be a favored name. She wrote to various other institutions of higher learning, and I can't be sure if it was UCLA, but certainly up at Santa Barbara, there were Fine Arts Affiliates. It seems to be a favorite name, just as Friends is, of that many support organizations. And I think that it was Virginia who did that basic research.
Well, I've read in the scrapbook and the materials about the event of Virginia Waters' home, Virginia certainly seemed to be the hostess for a lot of events.
Yes, she certainly was.
Yeah. Well, the purpose of, what did you see as the purpose of the affiliates?
What we wanted to do as the main purpose originally was to acquaint the town with the events that and all that could be viewed and participated in out there, because at that time it hardly anybody went out to anything. They had movies that were gratis. I can remember seeing some of the first Indian movies out there in the little theater, and but I wouldn't say that they were not attended at all, but hardly anybody ever went out there to anything. So we wanted to get people to go out there and to go to theater openings and to go to art openings and provide this in a socialized atmosphere. And I think to that extent it was very successful. Mm-hmm. But that was the first promotional idea. And I'm sure that the department heads felt that it would be good for the school, good for the students, to see some appreciation and interest on the part of the people in town.
Well, I should imagine you also think it was educational for the members themselves.
Oh, it was. Yes, it was. And the faculty was very good about demonstrations, which, of course, they still have to a certain extent. And I think that aside from board meetings, we plan to have several events every year. And hopefully money-raising events, to which there were, which would assist in things that just weren't in the budget.
Well, how did you choose that initial group of women? Just because you knew someone who
yes.
was working at the museum? Or
exactly, that whose interest fell along those lines, and that we knew would work, and truly take an interest in getting it going, which certainly occurred. It was really word of mouth, because I can't put it any better that I knew that those people would be interested, and I think we all brought people into the group. It wasn't just ones that I chose or anyone chose, it was everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, then when do you, the membership's increased and all of that over the years. During your term as president pro tem or whatever your title was in those days, I found several references. You had different titles at different times. When did you start the scholarship fund?
That was later, not under my tenure, and I can't be sure of which president it was. That was another initial idea, that scholarships would be very advantageous, but we were such a fledgling organization then that that had to be pursued at a somewhat later date. Our membership had to be considerably expanded before we could hope to obtain scholarship money. And I think that there were always categories of membership, but perhaps you have some notes there. At that time, I think there were memberships that were, business. Aside from, it was husband and wife or single persons, it's all the same price, family.
Yeah, what I found as far as the charter members
mm-hmm.
at that time, the dues were $5 and then a patron would be $50.
Mm-hmm. And that was usually considered to be a business.
Mm.
Now, there may have been some others, but I think businesses were approached for that.
Well, that first, as you became incorporated and did all that, about how many people were members, do you remember?
I think, you mean, not the original nucleus, but
so
when we had them...
How much was the original nucleus, maybe?
I think that that may have been 35 or 40 people.
Uh-huh.
And the membership, first membership party, the brass band party, I'm sure that we got 50 or 75 more, so it must have gone up to over 100 almost immediately.
Uh-huh. I found a reference to a meeting... a report from a PT Press Telegram article saying that your dinner meeting in March on March 17th, 1963. It was your earliest in the meeting. It was in a chart room, and then you had representatives of community groups at that. So that was a full year before you had the party at Virginia Waters. Mm. Do you remember anything about that meeting?
You mean the dinner meeting?
Yeah, 1963.
Not very much. I wonder how many people were there.
I don't know. I think Lise Emery had it, or somebody in some column.
Yes, I think she did. Of course, and I don't even remember, Anne, whether we had someone who spoke from the college, or whether it was just a dinner, or whether it preceded some theatrical production.
So you were still organizing at the time?
We were still organizing.
But the big kickoff was the party.
Yes, Virginia. Were you ever able to find out any clipping about that?
Oh, there are a lot of clippings about
that. Oh, there
are. It evidently rained that day. And we had to move things inside.
Why do you say that, John? But fortunately, it was a very large house.
Yes. Yes, there were several clippings on that event. And so everyone who joined because they had such a good time, they
yes.
Charter members.
Mm-hmm. That was a big push. And it seems to me, memory is faulty, we had people stationed at intervals out in the hall so that we could, as it were, trip people up and force them to join. The inevitable card table in the hall.
Well, you mentioned Dean Peterson, Larry Peterson. He
mm-hmm.
was pleasant to work with.
Oh, he was absolutely marvelous. I don't think there was any time we ever asked Larry for anything that he just didn't bend over backwards to do it. Both he and Enid were lovely people. They did a great, Enid was very helpful about the social aspects of it. In fact, all faculty wives were.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was anyone who didn't participate wholeheartedly, or apparently wholeheartedly, you know, the cookie trays, the this and that. And I had never known enough faculty wives to know whether that was a way of life or whether they were all just wonderful.
About Robert Tyndall, Dean Tyndall, did you ever work with him?
Yes.
I think he succeeded Peterson.
Peterson after Larry died. And all those people, there were the two Greens at that time. There was Music Green and Drama Green. And then later, Gordon Goodman Malamuth was in drama. I suppose that if I track my brain, actually I would think that most of our contact, well, Tom Ferraro was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me at that time he was still doing his graduate work out there. Goodness, I can't remember. And now he's so renowned and so old.
Well,
but Larry was just he was the one that we contacted most of the time when we wanted something done.
Well, I saw listed in some of the membership lists of officers and all that with Dean Tyndall, it said that he was the executive secretary of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so obviously it was always a close relationship with the
school. It was always a close relationship, and I think that it was dark. And Mary Carol McIntosh was on the board as well. I think it was always Dr. McIntosh's feeling that he wanted some members of the faculty to be on the board, not necessarily to be working members, but to be a liaison so that we would be, there would be no misunderstandings.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The only thing I can remember that Larry Peterson and the group ever disagreed about was his, at that time, Julian Musafia was a student. Hey, do you know Julian Musafia?
Oh, no
of him. And he was to have a concert, which was essentially under private auspices, and Larry was he was a protege of Larry's, and of course, as we know, very able. And he was anxious for us to use some of our money for that. And that was the only time I remember that we balked, because we felt we couldn't use public money for what was essentially private gain. And there was no problem about it. Larry understood. And I think that something was done ex officio with some of the members who just assisted, but we couldn't use the money that way. And, anyhow, Julian knew Sophia didn't need us.
He moved on.
He moved on.
Well, let's talk about the Sculpture Symposium. Certainly, that was a huge event in the summer of 1965.
Yes.
What was the role of the affiliates in that?
Well, they had a semi-official role, but essentially it was run by Ken Blinn. And there was a separate group which also had some members of the affiliates in it, but it was not officially done by them. No, it would have been hard to disentangle the people from one thing from another. I really think you should talk more to Ken about it, because he will be able to fill you in.
Yeah, I know. But I just wanted to know what role, if any, did.
They played a great role, because they did many social things. They provided practical assistance in things such as housing. Not all of the people, the sculptors who participated, wished to live in the dorms, or even if they started out that way, they didn't wish to. And just practical matters like that. I really don't remember much else, so we always had parties, so we must have had that.
I know there was a
luncheon to raise money that was held at the Garens. And, I can think Elaine, Elaine Burns Miller,
yes,
who became Collins.
Yes.
At that time she was Elaine Burns Miller. She was there, and I think that she contributed some money, quite a handsome sum.
Well,
that was to raise money for it. But I don't think that was the affiliates. I think that was a group. Because Mimi wasn't on the board then, I don't think, and yet she had it, and I remember Lorraine Burns Miller was there, but it was to raise money.
Well, the community steering committee, Bob Buffum was the chair.
Yes.
Because of the affiliation, I guess, with the museum, because he was a B&R patron, and then Bob Irvin was doing the public relations.
Right.
And then William S. Reed, Jr.
Yes, Bill Reed was a salesman for at that time Douglas.
Oh.
You know, one of the rarefied upper echelons, and very public spirited. And his wife was very interested in the museum at that time, Sylvia. And Bill Reed was very helpful, because he could make a lot of business contacts. And I think that Eric Laddie was at not Northrop. What was his aerospace name? Rockwell? Whatever it was, he arranged for some of the work that was very heavy to be done under those facilities.
There was one sculptor did work at North American.
North American, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Rockwell.
I've been reading a little bit. What I read was an article by Ken Glenn, and quotes from the sculptors. And the article was in Arts and Architecture magazine in January of 1966. And so Ken tells about the background of the whole Sculpture Symposium worldwide, and what all was done. And I've been told that there were some financial problems. Someone else that we have interviewed, not me personally, but an associate has interviewed, indicated that simply ran out of money, and one of the metal firms, whichever ones they were, came into the president's office and
Ken, I remember when he was always trying to raise money. It was a very expensive venture, and it just seemed impossible that it would be carried out at what was still quite a small institution of learning, and without. Well, Bob Buffum must have been tremendously helpful, because he you know, an old-line Long Beach family, and they were art patrons, and they've always been extremely generous, but how much individuals gave, I don't know.
Well, I've been told that the Press Telegram and Herman Ritter really gave quite a bit.
I think they did, and...
And this one incident, which was told to us, that Ritter bailed out of the symposium when there was a potential of the university being stuck with.
Now that you mention that, yes, it seems to be. You see, I wasn't involved with any financial problems, but it seems to be, yes, that it was. Grace Cameron was active in the museum then, and she was their executive secretary. So I imagine that she had Herman Ritter's ear, and in the last analysis, they probably did bail them out, but as far as the amount, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But there were many contributions, such as North American, and it seems to me that at that time it was still Douglas, I think, gave money.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's in this article that Ken wrote, his last sentence kind of intrigues me, and I don't know whether you want to comment on it. The last two sentences. There were problems and fights normal to any activity which forces creative people together. Some of the fights left scars. The scars, too, may cause a permanent change in the face of sculpture. Did you want to comment on any of that statement?
Well, I don't think that I'm qualified to comment on it. There was certainly terrible infighting and backbiting and everything else, as he says. He says it better than I have. But as far as it leaving a mark on the sculpture of the world, I don't know what that was. There was, perhaps off the record, I would say that I don't think that the sculptures were well received by the town in general.
Yeah.
They were certainly not General Grant on a horse. And I don't think that there would have been, except for a small nucleus, there would have been very many people in the town who would have felt that that was sculpture.
Uh-huh.
So, as far as city money, that may have shot down city money.
Uh-huh.
I don't know whether the city gave any money or not, or whether it was all private.
I'm not sure that they did either.
And I don't think
contribution was in kind of service.
Yes, it was. That was all. There was nothing else from the state.
Yeah, and whether how much the foundation might have given, I'm not sure. But certainly was a very large undertaking.
It was a very large undertaking, and certainly Ken was to be congratulated. I can't remember where it was, but at someone's home, the initial meeting, and he spoke very positively and very forcefully, and he really did generate a lot of enthusiasm. But again, off the record, the enthusiasm that's generated in one evening does not necessarily continue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
now you want to talk about Friends of the Library?
Sure, let's talk about Friends of the Library and all the censorship
times
that were happening. Well,
that was the brainchild of Phyllis Schmidt. I don't suppose there was anyone in our quarterly who didn't read a lot and know many of the librarians. And she gathered a group of women together, and I think Virginia Laddie was there, and I think Virginia Waters. I know Blanche Collins was, and it was just about the time of the trouble about Cousin Sarka's book. And she was feeling a great deal of pressure about this. And, of course, as an old-line friend of the library, you know all about the peculiar structure of that committee that rules on books, which mm-hmm. is peculiar to this situation alone. And Blanche felt that it would be wonderful if we could have some sort of an organization that would just generally support the library. At that time, they didn't particularly need money, but they needed community support against decisions such as to ban a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it's been successful in generating interest in the library. I think that it's just gone wonderfully. It still has a good nucleus of members, doesn't it?
Yes, it has. Total, probably about 400.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it...
has changed a little bit, though.
Yes. I think that, you know, it was a situation waiting to happen. Every other place has, or most other cities of any size, have an organization that support their library. And one thing that we did after that, you know, when they were trying to get the new library, I think one of the few things that they asked us to do, except push cookies, was to just go out with petitions and see if we could get people to support it on a bond issue, which, of course, was never possible. I always treasure the memory of one man who I interviewed, and he said, I have never read a book, and no one in my family has ever read a book, and I don't want a new library. Isn't that a marvelous thing? Well, if I hadn't been a friend of the library, how would I have ever heard that amazing statement?
Well, then, what did Phil Schmidt do? I mean, did she try to get other people? At one time, I was told that Phyllis kind of differed from Blanche because Blanche wasn't quite...
as militant?
Yes.
Well, I think Phyllis has always been very militant. But Blanche was certainly behind the effort to get it started. And I don't know how one could be more militant.
I was told that Phyllis wanted a certain speaker, and Blanche really felt that he might be too radical, and that she wanted not to appeal to the middle-of-the-road people politically to support the library, that she wanted a broad consensus of support for the library.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably true. It seems to me that our first speaker was Ray Bradbury.
Uh-huh.
Is that correct?
I don't know if he was the first, but I don't remember. You had a meeting, I know, at Virginia Waters' house, and Dixon Gayer spoke.
Yes. And then I think... then.
Bradbury did speak early on.
Bradbury did. I think Phyllis was instrumental in having the speakers. And that particular meeting was down at the old Buffum House, Wrestle Rig, was 7th or 8th place or something like that. And Ray Bradbury did speak. And he's always charming. And whether he is middle of the road or not, he gives that effect. And I think that, you know, he was just a charmer. And I don't know who the speaker in question was that was the controversy. I seem to have a wonderfully holy memory. I can't remember at all. Would you like to have Phyllis' phone number? She'd be glad to talk to you about it.
Well, sometime we'd probably be able to get it from you, yeah.
Because
we've done a couple of interviews on the early days of the library.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in one of these that this reference is made. And I haven't done my homework, so I can't give you the name of it. And there's a lot to go into.
There certainly is.
Okay, well.
And I think that on that particular endeavor, I was membership chairman.
Uh-huh.
So I don't have much memory of the nuts and bolts. A lot of other people were doing important things.
You went to council meetings?
Oh, yes. We went to council meetings, and I wrote the membership letter, or the appeal to membership letter. And I wish I'd kept a copy. I think it was a very good letter, probably one of the best I've ever written. And
we'll look and see if we have it.
Well, I think it was only a page. You want to catch people's attention, which I attempt to do with colon. But I think I said it was a very alarming occurrence in Long Beach, the proposal of a book being banned or something. And we did get a tremendous response, and all the people who were so helpful. Bob Buffum, I can't say enough about, because he certainly must have gotten tired going to various meetings of earnest souls who were doing things like this, but he helped both with time and money, which is a lot to say for anybody who doesn't need to do either one.
Mm-hmm.
Had a true sense of noblesse oblige, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, now the affiliates have certainly grown over the years, but you've managed to stay on the board most all the time. One capacity or another?
Well, rather, but there were many. It was a long time I was off the board. And what did I go back on doing? Could it have been, was I insane enough to do social? Perhaps. They must have been scraping the bottom of the barrel. That was it. That was my first step down. But like all things, you enjoy it. You don't mind dragging the napkins and the cups and so forth around. And I knew everybody, and I knew my way around. And, you know, it should be mentioned as far as the affiliates go that when Sue Elliott was secretary, I don't know that we would have managed without her either. She smoothed our way a great deal. You could always go in and ask her a question. She was receptive. She knew where everything was. Nothing was too much trouble. So when I think of all the wonderful people that I've worked with, it's wonderful to be reminded of all these things.
Well, I think, personally, that's one of the things that you, the friendships you make in doing this kind of work. And this is the way you make friends and keep friends because of your experiences together.
Were you in the affiliates fairly early on?
No. I was in the affiliates first maybe 10 years ago or something like that. And then when I went back to school, I dropped out of everything.
Well, that was a sensible move. Well, then you weren't in the affiliates at the time Larry Peterson died.
Oh, no.
No.
Did you want to comment on that?
No, not ex officio, perhaps.
No, I didn't think so.